You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. It's a bright, sunny autumn morning. It is Thursday, October the 22nd, and there is very much a feeling of a changing of the seasons here in Britain, with the flat season gently ebbing away and the jumping starting to crank up into full gear. And tomorrow, I'll be bringing you this podcast from Cheltenham, their opening meeting of the season. But we continue to focus on all the top class action internationally as well, and with that in mind, in a few moments I'll be talking to John Gosden, who brings us up to speed with news of some of his stars out of the back of what was a rather disappointing British Champions Day for him, and confirms the horses that are likely to target the Breeders' Cup in a few weeks. But important international news came to us overnight concerning Aidan O'Brien's two intended runners in the Ladbrokes Cox Plate at Moonee Valley this Saturday, Armory and Magic Wand, who we were speaking about earlier in the week, with the latest on what's happened to both these horses and why they have to pass veterinary inspections again tomorrow. We're going to check in once again with Channel 7's Jason Richardson. Jason.
Yeah, so we've just heard the news from the Racing Victoria vets that they scan all the major horses leading, all horses leading into the major races, and the Cox Plate is on in 48 hours time, so they're scanning all the runners to make sure that there's no significant issues that may result in a catastrophic injury to the horse. They've been doing this over the last couple of years. It certainly does show any sort of wear and tear that a horse may have. Now, some of that wear and tear might be just natural for any horse who's a 2000 meter plus horse. But out of those scans, Magic Wand has been showing lameness in the right forelimb and will be rescanned tomorrow. And Armory is showing a degree of lameness in the left forelimb. Now, we interviewed Ben Mellum, who did a piece of work on Armory, and he was describing him as a beautiful mover and thought he was extremely sound. So that will be rescanned tomorrow. Racing Victoria, they've got the best intentions, and that is to make sure that we don't have any catastrophic injuries in our biggest races on the biggest stage in a sport in Australia, that with animal equine welfare, which is of paramount importance everywhere around the world, but that's when the focus of our nation concentrates on our races. Racing Victoria wanting to ensure that the horses are in the best possible shape. And we've seen Marmello and Ispolini scratched last year due to these scans, that they were deemed unfit to run in Melbourne Cups. And now we've had an issue where both of the Cornwall horses will be re-scanned or reassessed tomorrow to see whether or not there is that lameness has started to develop. So very disappointing for Cornwall, very disappointing for everyone involved, and fingers crossed that tomorrow that they come through that assessment and they're A-OK.
How much debate is there in racing circles in Australia about whether these tests are being carried out correctly?
That's a great question. There's a lot of debate about the science, and we saw that with Marmello played out really strongly last year, where Marmello, Huey Morrison's vets, were saying, we scan him constantly, and what you're seeing on the scan is normal for him. And Racing Victoria vets are saying what we see on the scan concerns us from a catastrophic injury point of view. So I applaud their mentality and their thought process and what they are trying to achieve, but I just barrack hard that the science is 100% right, because the last thing we want is to scratch perfectly sound horses that have come all the way across the world at a cost of $100,000 a horse, if they are sound to run. So it's such a fine line. There's so much discussion about it. I just barracked that the science is 100% spot on, because we need it to be spot on to ensure that we continue to attract the best international horses to run for big prize money in Australia.
I mean, Richo, a conspiracy theorist would say that between this and the slightly unsatisfactory quarantine facilities at Werribee, the Australians don't really want European competition.
And that's a disappointing theory, because I can tell you it's 100% incorrect. They definitely do want them there. There's a lot of discussion about Werribee, though. You've raised an interesting point. I know we've had some trainers in the past who are dissatisfied with Werribee as a quarantine facility due to the tightness of the track. Now, I think Werribee's a perfectly fine surface. Whether the artificial surface is of the quality that the European horses are used to is one question. And also whether or not the European horses who have galloped under the beautiful, Warren Hill, for example, at Newmarket, are then suitable to do a lot of work at Werribee on a tighter circuit and constantly turning. The more you turn a horse, we know that that's more they become susceptible to injury. So that's a discussion point that I know has been discussed a lot around Newmarket in the past. But then there's a horse like Prince of Arran who just thrives around Werribee and loves every centimetre of the turf there. So it takes a special horse to settle in Australia and be competitive in these great races.
Well, we're looking forward to the Cox Plate this weekend. Richo, thanks very much for talking to us.
Yeah, I'm barracking for Armoury, so I've got my fingers crossed that tomorrow is a good day in regards to the vets. Great to chat to you, mate.
Well, my thanks to Jason Richardson for the update. Joining me to discuss that and all other matters this morning is RTE and Racing TV broadcaster Jane Mangan. Jane, what's your view on this?
I think it's a fine line, and we must ask the question, who is training these horses? Is it vets or is it their trainers who have looked after them from day one to the day they'll probably retire? I think to insinuate that anybody would run a horse that could be in jeopardy of getting injured is the ultimate insult. And while science has its place, it should never be the only catalyst or the only deciding factor, because common sense and the experience of horsemen and women that go with these horses, that know them so well, and if that has no weight, if that has no bearing, then we are fighting an unwinnable battle, because science has its place, but there is a place for common sense that is being completely overlooked, I think, in this instance. Now, without knowing any details of these horses, I know that both, particularly Magic Wand, a globetrotter, has contested Group 1s in 9 different countries in 4 different continents. And while she's won one, she's been second in 8 Group 1s. She's the ultra-consistent mare. And to insinuate or to think that anybody, particularly Aidan O'Brien and his team, who are so experienced with running horses internationally, would jeopardize or put a horse in a race that they think that they could get hurt is beyond me. And this is a case that has reared its head again and will continue to do so if we don't deal with it and discuss it properly. It's not that long ago Huey Morrison and Marmello were not allowed to run in the Melbourne Cup for similar issues. And I think it's something that needs to be, on an international scale, it needs to be discussed. And I have been in Aintree when, for the Grand National, one of the most viewed and watched and sought after sporting events, where the vets check the horses. They use a degree of common sense, and I think that might be missing here with Racing Victoria.
I think that's the key, isn't it? I was speaking to Jason there. It's not that anyone objects to these horses being checked for their welfare, particularly when the world is watching these high-profile races. But the points I would make is, first, every horse in every race should be checked the same. A horse's life is no more important in front of a global audience than it is on a quiet day at a country track. You know, they all matter just the same, and we've got to take the same approach to welfare. And the second point I would make is that you have to know the horse's own veterinary history. It's a bit like a doctor examining you without full access to your medical records. You can't do a proper job.
Absolutely. And when you get to these high-end horses, they're after fighting a lot of battles. They might have a couple of war wounds, but the person who knows them best is the trainer. And they are not going to put a horse where they could get injured. I think that would be the ultimate insult to any horse, man or woman, in this game, to think that you would put a horse where they shouldn't be. And I would interpret this as Aidan O'Brien, we don't think your horse should run. Can you not trust Aidan O'Brien, one of the world's best trainers, to know the difference?
Well, it's been a challenging few weeks for Aidan O'Brien by his own very high standards, that it hasn't all been smooth sailing for his great rival in the UK either, John Gosden. He had an unusually disappointing day at Ascot on Saturday. And with that in mind, I gave John a call this morning and asked him about some of his stable stars and what their plans might be for the remainder of this year and next. And he began by explaining why it was quite an emotional day for all at Clarehaven.
The end of an era. Enable is going to the stud today. We just let her wind down after the deep round of the arc, and she's actually in great form. So look, actually it's very pleasurable because she's leaving happy and sound and very full of herself, very contented. So it's wonderful to have all that racing over all those seasons, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and be able to retire sound and in good order in herself. Mr. Dettori was here this morning, popped the silks on and sat up on her. Just, you know, like the old pictures are done in the old days in the yard, and she's in grand form and heading off to stud in about half an hour.
I know you don't really like to make comparisons, but would it be fair to say she's given you more personal pleasure than just about any other horse you've trained?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a trainer and jockey, the ones we really love are the ones that try and give everything and want to work with you, and she was the most fantastic filly for her sheer appetite and joy of training, and wanted to be out there and wanted to get out first thing in the morning, you know, with everyone else. And I think when you, it's like working with people and you have someone with that positive mindset, it does make the training a lot more pleasurable. But of course, over that period of time, one's had an enormous number of worries and injury and surgery and coming back from it. We've been through all of that. And I think when you have a filly, a race mare like her, who had such international following, yeah, I think probably I'll sleep a little better now. You know, the weight of responsibility will be lessened somewhat.
Was there a little bit of a relief when you actually made the decision to finally call it a day and say, right, that's it, she doesn't need to do any more?
I think in a sense, I mean, we know it was a velodrome of bicycle racing, it went slow and the ground was deep, and we all know all that, and there's no point going on about it. It was an unsatisfactory race, but that's life. You know, there had been a thought, should we look at Ascot? Well, given the ground at Ascot, I'm very glad we ruled that one out in the retirement. And the other thing was whether she go back to Kentucky. She's won a Breeders' Cup there. But Churchill is a very different track to Keeneland. Churchill has that longer stretch, which suits her style of running, whereas Keeneland, is a tighter turning track, shorter straight, and it's sand-based and got very loose. We ran Golden Horn there, and he got beaten the neck spinning his wheels. So we decided, no, although she's in great nick, we're not going to go anymore. And I think it was the absolute correct decision.
I partly called you this morning because it's very unusual for us to have an autumn where the Gosden string doesn't seem to be sort of firing on every single cylinder. You don't really have disappointing days, especially when it comes to Group 1 days. Was it a long journey home from Ascot on Saturday?
No, we've had obviously won the Sun Chariot here at the beginning of the month, but I think the problem was, and I did mention it at the time, I think when we had all that enormous amount of rain last year and we switched to the inner track, it was fantastic racing. I mean, Stradivarius and Kew Gardens crossing the line together. You had a three-way photo finish for the filly and mare race with Starcatcher, and you had a marvellous Magical putting in a great performance. And it was, you know, an exciting finish, horses finishing, quickening, and it's because it's sand-based, because it's not been watered on all year and it hasn't been raced on, it rides very well. And it would have just been on the easy side of good on Saturday, and it was noticeable that the jump track at Kempton was advertised as good to firm in places. And I think, obviously, you had to be a real deep ground specialist to be able to handle that, the heaviest ground ever known on a petrometer on a Champions Day, but drying out ground, which is the worst because it's a deep glue pot. You go in and you don't see it fly up, it's when you bottom, you just sink in. And I'm afraid our runners that's not their scene. Here at Newmarket, when it gets soft, they shut the gallop, so we don't practice that kind of thing. And quite frankly, the whole lot of them loathe the ground. So, and then one of them pulled the shoe off leaving the gate, Palace Pier, and banged himself, so he was pretty sore afterwards. So, and he still hasn't been ridden since, so you can imagine. So it was a little bit like a little bit like the retreat from Moscow, actually, given the conditions. But look, I'm happy for my friends, a lot of them who won the races, and that's great. But I'm not sure it's the spectacle one wants for a Champions Day. And I think when you have the option of the inner track, I think they need to exercise it more when you get the heaviest, deepest spectrometer reading they've ever had.
And you banked on the day in a sense with the really good 3-year-olds Palas Pir and Mishrif, and you mentioned that Palas Pir had pulled a shoe off. That was right at the gate, was it?
Yeah, leaving the gate, I think he got a bit squeezed both sides. Shoe came off, and Frankie said he never changed his leads the whole way, and probably did very well to finish third. And he's a little sore after the race, to say the least, but he'll be all right for next year.
Well, that's good news that he's coming back into training next year, because the dearth of 3-year-olds that are coming back is a bit of a worry, isn't it?
Well, Mishra comes back, but he found it too deep, and so there's another good 3-year-old. But look, all in all, it was one of those days that, and it wasn't an awful lot better for Aidan. I think when I saw Magical struggling to handle it, I thought that was a little bit of an eye-opener, to say the least.
So Palas Pir and Mishrif will both come back as 4-year-olds?
Yes, indeed. And Lord North hopefully will be back. And the great Stradivarius is going to try and win a fourth Gold Cup. The soft ground he ran on, it just rained on summer ground. That's a lot different to what he was contending with there, poor fella. Frankie said he just got stuck in his swimming body.
And as regards the rest of the international season, how big is your squad going to be for, say, Breeders' Cups or Hong Kong's or Japan's?
I think, obviously, you're dealing with the COVID business. We've had people who get, they're quarantined for 14 days on the way back from France. We've got to deal with all this getting into America. But at the moment, we're considering Lord North, who hated the ground, didn't have a, he's all right maybe for the turf. And we have a filly called Terra Bell, and we didn't run in the mile, thank goodness, QE2, she could go for the filly and mare. And we're also looking at with Medea, who actually ricked her back when she ran in the Prince of Wales and has only had one run last Saturday since all year. She had two races all year. So we're looking at it with those at the moment, but final decision's got to be made over the weekend.
Yeah, she ran pretty well, Medea, didn't she, on Saturday?
She did, off coming straight into a mile and a half. And she was, alas, she took her own quarter at the last part.
John, thank you for talking to me, and best of luck for the next few weeks.
Alrighty, bye.
Well, my thanks to John Gosden. And given the fact, Jane Mangan, that we've been on this podcast talking about horses not staying in training next year, great to hear that Palas Pir, Mishrif and dear old Stradivarius, they're all having another go.
Yes, well, you'd like to think that Mishrif and Palas Pir could have their best days ahead of them. They look like they're still full of immense potential. And had they retired, they would have retired with maybe more questions than answers about them. And Stradivarius, completely on the other side of that spectrum, has done it all, has proved it all. But he's the horse that is breaking records and wants to set his own precedence and basically etch his own name in the record books. And the only way you do that is if you hang around long enough to do it. And it's nice to see a horse try and emulate the record that Yates set a number of years ago. And full credit to his owner, Bjorn Nielsen, for being so ambitious.
And given your comments last week about Palas Pir, that really would have been unfinished business, to coin the phrase I've been using again all week, if he'd not gone round again.
Yeah, like, nobody's contesting the fact that we think he's really immensely talented, but he hasn't done it against enough of opposition that I could definitively say he was the best miler in Europe. I still don't think he's done that. And look, last week he had his excuses, but it'd be interesting to see him back next year, a year older, a year stronger, and a year more mature. Like, looking at him in the ring at Ascot, he's drop dead gorgeous. So if he has a fruitful year next year, he's another seriously talented proposition for them to go to stud. But when he has danced more dances.
And confirmation that Terra Bellum, possibly Medea, and Lord North on a bit of a recovery mission at the Breeders' Cup.
Yes, Medea, obviously we watched her at Ascot, and obviously she's not terribly straightforward, but I think she could be suited to America. And Lord North has a really high rating that he hasn't maybe lived up to since Royal Ascot, but something about that horse suggests that there is another big day in him. And if they feel that he's worthy of travelling to America, then I wouldn't be writing him off just yet.
one man who is set to have a fantastic season next year, perhaps even bettering what's been a wonderful 2020 for him, is Johnny Murta, who has received patronage from the Aga Khan, for whom he rode a number of high-profile winners during his career. This is a neat completing of the circle, isn't it, Jane?
It's a lovely way to finish what has been a brilliant season for Orla and Johnny Murta, and I'm delighted for them. Johnny, I stood next to him for the Irish Derby this year. We watched the race and I asked him how many middle distance two-year-olds he had in training, and he told me his number, and I said, you're never going to win a classic if you don't have them. And he said, how do you mean? And I said, just watch the results, think about it. And I know he understood what I meant. And with a homebred operation like the Aga Khan now behind you, you have a chance of winning those races. Look at Ger Lyons. He's a fantastic trainer, has been for a long time, but until Judd Mont came on board, until Coolmore came on board, he didn't have the ammunition to attack those races. And in the space of 2 years of having those operations on board with a very small number of horses, he's won an Oaks and he's won a Guineas.
Tell me a little bit about the mood in Ireland at the moment, because you're at category five, but you're allowed to travel around the country just for work purposes.
Yes, so thankfully the government has classified racing as an elite sport along with GAA and soccer and rugby. So we are tentatively continuing as best we can, just praying that we can all just have everything go smooth. Now, there is other sidebars to this. We have no auction, no public auction in November, which means obviously the horses in training, the yearling sales and the National Hunt foal sales have all been moved to December and January. So we're hoping that this 6 weeks of level five lockdown will get us to a position in December where we can have some degree of normality, considering we haven't had a public auction in Ireland for a very long time, and racing behind closed doors, while it is much better than the alternative, we want to start making progress, and it feels like we haven't for a very long time.
And the authorities in Great Britain are being pressured to pressurise government more to open up racecourses to crowds still, in spite of the situation that prevails. Is there a much more cautious prevailing mood amongst racing professionals in Ireland, do you think?
I think there is. I think we're just trying to survive. That's what it feels like. We're trying to, instead of swimming to make progress, we're swimming to stay afloat. And that's what it feels like. And we're just trying to get to Christmas because it is so important. All the National Hunt Yards who emptied out so early in the spring are now full max capacity, and we can't have a second emptying of the yards. That just doesn't work. People will lose their jobs and go out of business. And even from Leopardstown down to the point of points are continuing. And that is so important because that is how we at grassroots level survive as well. So we are grateful that the government supported us in the budget, and the fact that we are classified as an elite sport was tremendously important, and such relief when we found that out when the Taoiseach made his announcement a couple of days ago.
We must talk about Tiger Roll, who runs this afternoon.
Yes, star attraction at Navan and wonderful ride for young Sam Ewing, just a teenager, only has his license a couple of months. A big ride for him to get, but he takes off quite a big lump of weight off Tiger Roll, who would imagine is going to skip down Royal now and maybe go back to Cheltenham for the cross country race before Christmas. But great to have him back. Obviously, last year wasn't straightforward, and the fact that the National didn't happen maybe was a blessing in disguise. But all degrees of positivity coming from Cullentra are great, and it'll be everybody will tune in to see this horse because he is unique.
It's worth thinking about, Jane, that the man who rides Tiger Roll in public under rules today was just 9 years old when the horse made his racecourse debut. It's quite extraordinary.
It is a story in itself, but to be fair to Tiger Roll, he is not that old. It feels like he's been around a long time because, of course, he won a Triumph Hurdle. He is a very special horse, and hopefully this will be the ideal start to what will be another fruitful campaign. And I know connections are telling us that the cross-country chase at Cheltenham is his main objective, but we all know that a date at Liverpool in April is what we all want to see.
And of course, it is the changing of the seasons. And I've been bombarded with requests to shift my focus, which we will be doing in coming weeks. Of course, we'll be taking in all the great international racing in America and Hong Kong and Japan and Australia. But we will be focusing just as much on the domestic jump scene here in Great Britain, which really kick-started tomorrow with action from Cheltenham, their first big meeting of the season, which we're much looking forward to. Jane, all you need to do is send me home with a winner.
Well, I'm in bad need of a winner as well. So I think the boss's Oscar is going to win the 3:17 at Thurles. We watched him closely when he finished fifth in the Martin Pipe at Cheltenham last year behind the Indefatigable. And to be fair, he had no luck in running that day. The Great White Shark finished third. He finished fifth. And I think he should be good enough to win the 3:17 at Thurles today for Gordon Elliott and Gavin Bruder.
Jane, thank you very much. Thank you for listening as well. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, to tell your friends, rate us, review us, and subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, or Google Podcasts, or just about anywhere else. And we will see you again the same time, the same place tomorrow. That was Thursday, October the 22nd. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.